This is Spirit Network Radio, a BBS radio production hosted by renowned clairvoyant medium Francine Milano. Spirit Network is committed to the dawning age of enlightenment, from the psychic to the holistic. If it's on the mind, body, and spirit, it's on Spirit Network.
Hello, and welcome to Spirit Network. I'm your host, Francine Milano, and I look forward to spending the next hour with you. Today, we're going to talk to author and speaker, Sayward Ayer, about her multifaceted life works, as well as her newest book, Aliens at My Fingertips. But first, I want to tell you about our sponsorship. We don't have a sponsor today, but I could be talking about your business right now. If you'd like to be a sponsor in Spirit Network, we have many advertising opportunities. Our shows are not just live, but they're archived on the BBS website, and the podcast is available on iTunes, so your message plays on to reach a lot more people for a long time, long after the live broadcast. So if you're interested, just simply email radio@spiritnetwork.com. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest. At age 18, Sayward Ayer wrote a list of everything she wanted to accomplish in life and divided into three sections of 30-year periods, projecting that she might live to be 90 years old. The last third included the desire to share her stories of her life through art and writing. Knowing she would be a writer in her later years, Sayward kept journals and photos of her adventures and experiences, which she now uses as references for her books. Sayward earned a BA in anthropology, archaeology, a master's of environmental studies degree, a doctor of naturopathy degree, a private pilot license, and a ham radio operator license. She has worked in the field of governments on both of the east and west coasts of the U.S. During the first decade of the 2000s, Sayward held a juice fasting retreats in Palm Springs, California. She now spends time writing her books, and with the plans to publish at least 10 more books within the next 8 years. Oh, this is a busy lady. So be sure to visit her website at saywardayer.com. That is SAYWARDAYRE.com. And we'll give you that information again a little bit later. For now, welcome to the show, Sayward.
Thank you for having me, and wow, I'm exhausted listening to all that.
I know, and you lived it. Oh my goodness. I'm exhausted thinking about the next eight, what was going to happen in the next 8 years for you.
Oh my gosh, I can't think that far ahead right now.
Oh, seriously. I have to say, when I came across your name on the internet, and I'm not really even sure where it was, I thought, you know, she'd be an interesting person to interview for my show. And I saw you had a new book out, which I definitely want to talk about. But when I started doing my homework, I was amazed at how many people you really are all balled up into the one little body. So before we go over the books, let's talk a little bit about how bookworthy your life really became. I mean, I think that you did accomplish a lot in those first two segments of 30, that's for sure. Can you tell us, like, tell our listeners a little bit about, like, even the interesting note of when you were born? Tell us a little bit about your parents and where you were born, because I like that little story.
Yeah, it is very fascinating little story about my parents. And I think that there were a lot of people doing similar things at the same time they were, although I don't know a lot of those stories. But my parents were from New England, New Hampshire, and they got married after a very short dating period. And mom graduated college, dad didn't finish, and they had a Willys 48, I think it was a 48 Jeep. And the year was 1950, and they hauled a little trailer from New England all the way across the Trans-Canadian Highway and up the Alcan Highway, which is the Alaska-Canadian Highway, and it runs up in British Columbia all the way through the Yukon and then into through Tok Junction and into Alaska. And back then, that Alcan Highway was nothing but a gravel road. It was very primitive, and the gas stations were spread out by about 300 miles apart, so you had to fill up every time you hit a gas station. And they got up to Alaska, and they had suffered a broken axle on the way up there, and in the trailer, I guess, and that had used up a bit of their saved money. They weren't wealthy. They were, you know, pretty poor people.
And living off the land.
Yeah, living pretty close to the land. And Dad decided that instead, he didn't have the money anymore to go to biology school. He was going to go to the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. And so what he did instead was they went to Anchorage, and he got some work for a year or so. And then they wanted to do another adventure. So Dad built a river boat. And he had never built one before, and they loaded it with provisions, and they took it down about three minor rivers that feed eventually into the, is it the Mackenzie? It flows north. It flows north and dumps out in the very top of Alaska, and it's a huge river. And anyway, they got up there, and they ended up living with the Native American, the Eskimos, I guess Inuits, I think. Eskimos, whatever, and they were living with them for a short while, and then Mom got pregnant with me, and she wanted electricity and running water, so they got flown out back down to Anchorage, where they could have, a little more civilization, and my folks were reading a book on it was an old early American author, Conrad Richter, who wrote The Light in the Forest, and I Heard the Owl Call My Name, but he also wrote a trilogy called The Trees, The Fields, and The Town. And in that book, my folks were reading right before I was born, the oldest daughter of their five children was named Sayward, and the book, the trilogy follows her life. And I read that book when I finished high school, the trilogy, and I was pretty pleased that they had named me Sayward after her. She was a good character.
Amazing. And you became that character because your first three books is basically a trilogy of your life.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
More or less, yeah, of the paranormal part of my life. Yeah.
Now, right. You're multifaceted. So whatever part of your life it was, I'm sure it was a good part because your parents sound fascinating. First of all, I have to say congratulations to your dad for making the boat. That actually got them there safely. But I got to say, your mom really must have been a gutsy woman.
Yeah, she was brave. And I think also she trusted Dad completely. And she was an outdoor woman. And she just figured that Dad was very capable in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. He was very smart in the wilderness. So he had grown up pretty much that way. And Mom just trusted his knowledge and just kind of went along, and it all turned out all right. And actually, Dad delivered all of us children, all of my brothers and myself. And he's not a doctor. He just read a book, and then he did it.
Gosh. Well, that's the wilderness, right?
Yeah. How
that's
it used
amazing.
To be done.
So they were kind of like their own brand of hippies, I guess, and you really didn't have a choice to turn out anything but the way you did, wanting to experience everything, because that's what you did.
Yeah, I kind of got raised that way. When you're raised that way, it's in your blood from an early time.
Yeah, now, it's amazing because I know that you also became a land conservationist, and you probably did a lot of things in their footsteps. But let's talk about the early years. I mean, you're an archaeologist, and you've worked in Jamaica, Southwest USA, Hawaii, Thailand, Australia. I mean, the Great Barrier Reef. That's like, tell me, where do you get all the energy?
I was young then.
This was the early years, yeah.
I had more energy then. I'm not sure I could do it now, but the opportunities just kind of presented themselves at the time. And like with the archaeology, I had taken, what did I do there? I forget. Oh, I had an opportunity through a girlfriend to go down and do archaeology in Ecuador shortly after I was married. And so I was gone 3 months shortly after I was married down in Ecuador working on this site. Now, this was a land site that was right along the coast, and it showed signs of continual occupation for over 5,000 years. So I felt very fortunate to be on such an ancient site, and I actually got to work on skeletons that we were unearthing at that time. So that was my very first experience.
Wow, now you were a newlywed, though. Did your husband go with you?
No. Well, he made a unilateral decision right before that, and I thought, well, okay, you're going to make a unilateral decision, I'll make one too. I had just graduated from college, and I had an honorary degree, and my degree was in anthropology, archaeology, and I really wanted to use it. So he was using his knowledge and skills to go the direction he wanted to go, and so I took the liberty to use mine because he did it with his without consulting me. So actually, that's what ends up breaking us up.
That'll do it. But you had to stay true to your wandering heart. You really really took after your father. I mean, I see a lot. And your mother, too. I mean, you have a lot of guts in some of the things. I don't think I would have been comfortable being a globetrotter. I mean, unless it you know, not the way you probably did it.
Yeah.
I mean, camping to me is like, if I can't plug my blow dryer in, there's a problem.
Keep your hair short, it'll dry quick.
No. Yeah. I got to go glamping. Right?
Down in Ecuador, I was actually invited to work on this site. So we all had accommodations. There wasn't much electricity, but we had excellent food. And boy, my hair grew really long down there, and my nails grew real strong and long fast because we were eating fresh fish every night caught out of the ocean. It was delicious. And we were well taken care of. So in all the archaeological places that I've been, we've had hotels to stay in or accommodations that were very good. I don't recall ever camping at any of the archaeological places. Even on the Great Barrier Reef, when we did that, we were on this very large ship that had, I think, four or five decks to it, and we each had our own little room, you know, so it wasn't primitive.
Right. Well, and nor should it have been. When you're camping, you should just go camp. But you did a lot of backpacking. I mean, maybe not as an archaeologist, but I mean,
right.
You're definitely
recently,
a nature girl.
Yeah, a year ago, I actually finally had been meaning to do it since the age of 40, and here I am, 62, but I finally did the John Muir Trail from Yosemite down to Mount Whitney, and that was just around 230 miles. I started with a 47-pound pack, and it took me 18 days, and it was pretty incredible. It was beautiful, absolutely gorgeous.
Okay, I'm going to need a nap after the show. I'm just too absorbed
at all.
I almost shut my eyes for a minute after that. I was starting to breathe heavy. Well, your life roles have included land conservationists. Tell us a little bit about that. What did you do?
Well, when I got back to New England, and I had told myself that I would live back there for a 5-year period, because all my aunts and uncles, like I said, my folks were from there, their sisters and brothers and all my cousins, everybody was back there, and I wanted to get to know them all. But at the same time, I also wanted to do what I could, get involved in the community. So I worked in a number of different areas back there, not just land conservation. With land conservation, I would go as a steward and check out the land, and we would discuss whether or not the group I worked with should take it on or how it was going to work for us, you know, to be able to take it on, that type of thing. But I also worked for the League of Women Voters Natural Resources Committee, and we were very active in that. I also worked with the Sierra Club. I was an elected member on that. And I worked with the Montshire Museum, which is a joint effort between New Hampshire and Vermont in a museum that sits right on the border. And I did trail building and that type of thing for them. And at the same time, I had a small business that I ran. I started up. It was called For the Earth Bags. So I was having canvas tote bags made and sold around the country to try. This was 1991 and 92, and I was hoping that people would use those canvas tote bags instead of plastic bags. So I guess I could go back and try that again, but they're doing it now anyway, so.
Well, do you ever look around and see one of your bags?
Do I ever what?
You ever run into one of your bags?
On occasion, but not too often anymore. It's been quite a while. I still have a stash of them, and I still have all the original artwork for them. And I also worked as a waitress in the evenings 4 nights a week. So I was a little busy back there, too.
Oh, my gosh. And there's still like 4 or 5 roles, life roles that I want to talk about. I mean, that's crazy. That's just crazy. So so kind of an activist. Did you get involved politically then?
I did, actually. Yeah, I did get involved politically. And at the end of, I created a march. I kind of put it together, and there was a lot of publicity around it, and a lot of people participated in it, and it was because we had a board of supervisors in this very small town that I was living in which I was the chairperson for the Conservation Commission. Our elected board of supervisors had their own, you know, they had, what do you call that, when they have their own ideas about what they want to do with stuff.
Ego. I call it ego.
Yeah, they had egos for sure, but they also had businesses that they were trying. We had an opportunity to have low income housing in the downtown part of White River Junction, and that's the little town that I lived in and was the chairperson for the Conservation Commission for. And they had designs on buying that building, conflict of interest, and so they were trying to keep that money away from White River Junction, and that was state money that was coming down through federal money. And so I organized this march, and quite a bit of publicity turned out from some large cities not too far away, and it made the news and the headlines, and they had to step down for not off the board, but they had to turn their attitude around. And now that huge hotel that sits downtown in White River Junction is for low-income seniors, and it's really good for them because there's grocery stores not too far away. They can walk to coffee shops, and they can walk to the train station, and so they can get what they need, and it's a lower-income residence for them. So there were some things I was active in, yeah.
That's great to look back and be able to see your work and where it is today. I'm sure if there was a threat there, you would jump right back in, too.
They're all the way over there. It's a different era now. They've got different people over there working now, so that would have to be.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. You seem to be able to be in two places at once.
Well, thank you, Beth.
You're an entrepreneur. You started a juice fasting retreat business in Palm Springs.
Uh-huh.
Do you still do that?
I would, and I may in the future. I have held singular individuals. If they call me and they say, I really want one, well, I'll organize and try and find a way to give a person one. But as far as doing the groups right now, there's a lot of coordination that goes on with whichever hotel is hosting it. Mm-hmm. And then there's just a lot of coordination. I have to, get colon hydrotherapists on board. I have to get massage therapists on board. I have to get yoga instructors on board. There's a lot of work that goes into it.
I actually organize the Spirit Network Festival every year. I totally understand events. Everybody has to get on board, and everybody has to be on the same page. And it's solely your responsibility to make sure that they are. So it's exhausting. It really is. So the last thing I want to, at least one more thing I want to touch on before I move over to another topic, is your private pilot's license. You must have a lot of stories about that. How did you decide you wanted to do that?
My dad was a bush pilot in Alaska, and from the age of 3, right, and I can remember sitting in the passenger side of the plane, and this was an old Aronca Champ. That line of planes got bought out by another line after that. But anyway, he would tell me to push this lever that was on the side door of the airplane to the passenger side. He'd say, okay, go ahead and push it now, and I'd push it slowly down, and meanwhile I'd be looking out at the wings, and I would see the flap lift, you know, or go down, whichever way I... And so it was, I don't know, and I just watched Dad doing it, and I knew other pilots when I was young, and it was just something I always wanted to do, and so I finally did it.
Well, I mean, I'm more a sailor. If you want, I can talk sailboats, but I don't speak plane.
All right.
But I'll tell you what, you impress me. I mean, just to do that. So that's something you wanted to do since you were a little girl. And one thing is, I think we all have dreams when we were kids. I mean, then they come from our parents, what we're going to do when we grow up or as soon as we're able to. But not a lot of us follow through. And I feel like you went a little bit above and beyond.
Thank you. I did kind of. But then again, a lot of people follow the program, which is you either get married after high school or you go to college and then you get married and then you have children and then you're raising them. And so I didn't follow that program.
I did get married for a short while.
Yeah.
But you didn't have any children?
No, I didn't.
I was going to say, how did you have the time? I get that.
I had a dog, though. I did have a dog for 11 years.
You are children.
That's right. He was my child, and that took a lot of energy.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, your life experience, obviously, we just kind of went through your resume. But it's included so much, and you really have made your goals. I'm sure there are a few things that you'd we all have regrets, but your life experiences that you've documented and you must have a bazillion stories. How did, you know, they're all for your book. You've referenced everything. You've documented your whole life, and a lot of people don't do that. How did that come about, you know, for the experiences of your book? I mean, let's talk about your books specifically and how you divided that up. Are they in time sequence?
Let's see. One book is in time sequence, and I believe that's book three, Connected by Consciousness, All Things Communicate, Everything Communicates. And I think I put those stories in there in sequence of time and how they unfolded. But in the other book, The Brilliant Beyond, Do Lucid Dreams Prove Eternal Life, I don't believe those are in sequence, I don't think that it necessarily matters whether they are.
Okay.
Or not.
All right. Well, let's talk about your first three books. Is a series called True Encounters. All right. So give us a little bit on each one, like starting with The Tribute to Og, the first book, and what are the contents on there? Give us some ideas and some, like, maybe you got a favorite story you want to share in there.
Okay. Tribute to Og was a lucid dream that I had back in 1998, and it was so profound in the morning when I woke up from it. It was so real while I was in it, and it covered almost a 20-year time span while I was in the dream, and it was set in the future after the world population has gone down a bit, but I don't have any memory of how that happened. And the planet was peaceful. There were no more wars, but there were alien spaceships over every major capital in every country of the world. And the main goal, there was still government. We still had government. I mean, the United States had government. I don't even know if it was called the United States anymore. It wasn't that explicit in my dream, the political stuff. Because I was in that dream, I was a young girl. I was living back east in New England somewhere along the eastern seaboard. And I was a very shy person. My personality was very different than in this life. And I had been raised by my grandmother, and my parents had died in an automobile accident when I was very young in that life. And I was living alone, and I was a graphic artist. I did artwork for a living. And the dream just unfolds where I end up in this very bizarre situation, meet a hybrid alien who's half human and half other, and we connect. We make this kind of connection that's not a sexual connection. It's more spiritual or empathetic connection. And we just stay together as friends, and then eventually we just stay together. I don't even know in the dream if we actually got married or not. I call him my life mate, because the book is called Tribute to Og, Memories of a Future Life Mate. Anyway, long story short, in the end, it's a very tragic thing. He had been, when he was developed, and I don't know if it was in test tube or what, on the ship, he had somehow acquired at least three extraordinary senses that nobody else that they knew of, that the aliens knew of, had. We don't have them down here as humans. They didn't have them up there. But he had three additional very amazing senses. And so he escaped from them, and that's when I met him. And they were always after him. So for that 20 years of the dream that unfolded, and there were some kids, that we had two children, and then in the end, they've always been chasing and hiding and trying to find us to take him out. He was, they were after him. And in the end, it's very sad. And I wake up from this, sad ending of this dream, not believing that this reality that I just woke up into is real anymore. I look around at this and I go, this isn't real. What was real is what I just dreamt, and I want to go back to it, and I want to change the ending. But of course, I never have been back to it, and I could never change the ending. But it was so shocking and felt so real to me that I was an emotional wreck for several days. I couldn't even go to work that very first day when I woke up. I had to call in sick. And after that, I did go back to work, but it was so traumatic because it had seemed so utterly real. And so that's what the whole book is about. And it's actually because of that dream that I have a bit of hope for the planet, because it was with all these different elements of aliens. I mean, it's not just one kind. It's not just like the reptilians or the grays or something like that. There were a whole slew of them involved in trying to clean up the planet. And that's what the whole goal of everybody's mission was. All the politicians were in on it, and they had to consult with the aliens, and the aliens had to, approve anything that was done on Earth. And they were kind of like the higher authority, the aliens were, on getting Earth back into shape and cleaning it up. And really, so it's that dream that gives me some hope for this planet, because otherwise, I look down the road, and without a little bit of outside interference, I don't think that we're looking too good for the long distance future.
I agree with you, and I do believe that they're watching, and they're in place. They're definitely watching. And I also feel that I've had some interactions as far as this political kind of situation. I have a friend here on Earth that when we connected, it was like we knew each other from a past life, but I kind of feel that it's from this life. And, there's some kind of a council that I believe that humans are helping the hybrids and the ETs in whatever this mission is that this council has. And it's all very fuzzy for me, but there have been glimpses that you kind of look and go, that's real. That's not a dream. Yeah. That's real.
Yeah, and I agree.
Yeah, because you're transported. It's very much like, I think, I'm also a medium, and it's very much like people when they say, how do I know that was real? You just know when there's a visitation.
Right.
There is something different about it. It has a completely different aura. So that was such a detailed dream that you had. It was like you must have been sleeping for a week.
And that's another thing that's unusual about, well, kind of interesting, I think, anyway, because it speaks to the time-space. It reminds me of the movie Contact. Did you see the movie Contact?
I did.
Right. When she's falling in that disc, and I think the whole fall lasts about 18 seconds when the disc is falling down through that whirling circles of electromagnetic energy, and there's all kinds of chaos going on. And for her, it was something like 18 hours that she went down those wormholes, and had experiences and went to other places, but for the people observing and watching, it was something like 18 seconds. And I thought that was, so that's how it is for me and when I'm dreaming. My time, my consciousness experiences time in a different way than the time that's on this plane. Like if somebody had been watching my rapid eye movement that night when I had that dream or that early morning when I had that dream, mm-hmm. I'm sure that I probably only was in that dream for maybe at the most 15 or 20 minutes. And yet for me, it was a 20-year period.
Which is interesting because the science does say that, you know, that you dream in real time. I mean, if you're eating a hamburger in your sleep, in your dream, it takes the same amount of time to chew and swallow. And so it's kind of interesting.
I'm not sure they've got that down yet.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things they don't have down yet, but that's a whole other show.
Yeah, and I think quantum physics is proving more and more that different states of consciousness go into different realms of time.
Yeah, I mean, there's no sense of time and space on the other side that it would be like here. It is just a blip, you know.
Right.
I mean, so a lot of people feel like if people are even like spirits that might be a little stuck, you know, I try to assure them it's okay because when they just experience it all in one little bubble, you know, you're reaching in and you're grabbing a moment.
That's right.
But it's all in a bubble.
Yeah.
And here it's linear from, you know, birth all the way to death. So it's an interesting concept. I mean, I'm fascinated by quantum physics, but there's only so far that my head will wrap around, you know, and then I go, okay, enough. I'll digest more another
time. Well, that's for most people, you know, because we don't think like that because life itself is so different.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have some limitations in the brain, that's for sure. But just to know where the possibilities are, even if I don't understand them, I'm big on belief, you know, and big on faith, too.
Yeah.
You know. So, okay, so that's a very interesting book. So I, you know, I hadn't read, of course, your first three books. I mean, since I just contacted you last week. But
Right.
That's your life experience. I mean, I expected a life awaking part of your experience. It's like you haven't done enough in awake. You have to go 20 years in your sleep too. I mean, gosh.
Yeah. And the second book, Brilliant Beyond, that's also about lucid dreams, but it's a compilation of many different lucid dreams. And one of those lucid dreams was similar to what you said. There was a council. I actually was taken with a guide up to a council, and it was an open air in a moderately sized stadium. And there were other people with guides seated around. We were all seated and then far enough away from each other so that we couldn't communicate with each other, which made me realize we were not there to communicate with each other. We were there to witness the council. And the council was around this large oval table, and there was every kind of strange being. There were about 12 or so strange beings, each with a different look to it, different height, different coloration, different kinds of appendages, you know, and then one moderator at the head. And this was back in 1973, I think it was, when I was very, very concerned about nuclear war. We were all being threatened with nuclear war at that time. The culmination of that, I got to listen to what they were all discussing. The culmination of that was that they decided that they would all keep a very close eye on Earth and nuclear activities, and they would make sure that no nuclear wars were started. And if something flew, they would disable it. And, you know, what's really, it's interesting because so many nukes have been disabled.
And it is absolutely true. I don't want any men in black knocking on my door, but I know someone who has passed, and I feel from that experience with this person, I feel very assured that if somebody goes to hit a button, that it will not work.
Yes. I feel that way too. I feel I'm not afraid of nuclear wars anymore. But this stuff that is happening now, the chemtrails in the skies, the acidification of the oceans, these kinds of things are worrying to me.
Yeah, they're just as dangerous, really, in long term. We're going to become, and with the GMOs, don't get me started.
Oh, gosh. That's insane.
GMOs and the modified foods that we're eating and this new generation's eating, I feel like we're going to be mutants if we're not careful.
Yeah.
That we will be something that we've never been before. And so I'm with you, sister. I get it. There's definitely this earth. We're supposed to be moving forward. But the deal is that the extraterrestrials, and let's just say, for argument's sake, that they seeded the planet. They're from the future so far that, like, we are just ancient, and they're just trying to make sure that we catch up and don't burn ourselves out first. Like, because they definitely have a vested interest in us proceeding.
Right.
For our success.
I kind of feel like planet Earth, from everything that I've studied and seen in archaeology and ancient history and all that, this is such a fertile planet that it's almost like their garden. When you say Garden of Eden, it really is like a Garden of Eden. This whole planet is such a growing, fertile planet. I mean, it's not that there isn't life on other planets. There absolutely is life all throughout the universe, in my opinion. The fact that it's here proves that it's everywhere, but not quite everywhere. I mean, this is one of the more fertile ones, I think, and this is, at least in this neck of the neighborhood of the galaxy, probably. And I think that they've got a vested interest in making sure that their garden doesn't wither and die.
Absolutely. I think there's been a lot of interventions.
Right.
I hope that there doesn't have to be a lot more, but they do what they do. They just do what they do. And I know that there are some with different agendas, but that's
exactly
a whole nother show again, a whole nother
yep.
show.
Yep. Exactly.
So the Brilliant Beyond is what, like multiple lucid dreams. Are they all basically the same topic?
They're all different. Okay. They're totally different.
All right. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, gosh. Well, probably that roundtable discussion.
Yeah.
That was pretty wild.
Pretty good. Okay, so your next book, the last of the trilogy.
Uh-huh,
the series,
Connected by Consciousness.
Tell us the contents of that one.
That is paranormal experiences. I call them paranormal experiences because they're strange and unusual things, and they would be labeled as paranormal, that have happened to me in my life in wake time. Things that have occurred during wake time. So it's not dreams. This is the real McCoy. I mean, to give you an example, there was this archaeological buddy that I used to have. He was about 20 years older than me, and we worked all the way from Texas to Santa Barbara on the All-American Pipeline in 85 to 86, I think it was. Maybe it was 86 to 87. I can't quite remember. But anyway, we stayed friends. He was kind of like a father image to me in a way, and a good friend. And we stayed friends after that job was over. And he had told me about certain things in life to make sure I went and did, and I had done some of them, and I was very happy I had. And finally, he was doing his last round-the-world trip, and he invited me to come down and spend Christmas down in which country was? Oh, Mexico. And I did. And we had a falling out. Sometimes when people get, he was in his mid, early 80s, I guess it was. And he was kind of losing it a little bit mentally at that point. His eyes were practically couldn't see anymore. And sometimes people get a little bit funny as they get older, And so he was more snippety and not as nice as he used to be. And so we had a falling out, which was very unfortunate, and I felt very badly about it, and we never reconciled it.
Oh, you will.
We did.
Okay.
This is the story. It was so amazing. I had been hiking on the Pacific Crest Trail through Oregon, the state of Oregon. And when I was just about to, I can't remember where I was just about to, but anyway, I camped one night after a long day of hiking. I pitched the tent. It was beautiful sun rays slanting through the tall, skinny trees, and I was just exhausted. And you know how you get when you're really physically exhausted. You just lie there in this kind of a state of bliss just to be lying down, you know?
Right.
I checked my cell phone. And I've never before and never again had a cell phone signal while I've been hiking on the on the Pacific Crest Trail. And I had a signal, and I had a message, and I listened to it, and it was a friend of his telling me that my friend had died. Mm-hmm. And I went to play it again, and there was no signal. It had just vanished, so I only got to listen to it once. So then I'm lying there in this beautiful evening. I'm all, you know, peaceful and blissed out, feeling sad, feeling remorse that I never reconciled with him before he died. You know, because we had been friends for a long time and done all that archaeology together. Not just, he was the crew chief and I was a crew member. We always had about 5 members on a team. But it was only him and me that got allowed to do the archaeological work in California. So the rest didn't get to do it. So, I mean, it was very interesting how that we had this kind of archaeological connection. And anyway, I'm lying there thinking about this and feeling sad, and all of a sudden he is talking to me. His head is floating off to the left side of me. I can literally see it, and he is talking to me, and I can hear his conversation inside my head. I hear it. It's not, if somebody else had been standing around, they would not have heard it. It wasn't sound waves that went through the air, but it was in my head. I could hear him talking to me, and he was telling me, don't feel bad. That was my fault. I'm just an old curmudgeon, and don't worry about it. We're still friends. And I was saying, in my mind, I was speaking back to him. It wasn't coming out my lips. It was in my mind. I was speaking back to him and saying, oh, I'm so glad you feel like that and that you're not angry. I felt so bad about the whole thing. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We went back and forth with about 3 or 4 sentences on each side, and poof, it was gone. And then I lay there and I went, whoa, what was that? And
check,
I thought,
and see what's
okay,
in your canteen. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just real tired, and I just imagined it, and I thought, maybe I can imagine it again, because I am a skeptical person. I am more scientific than woo-woo. And I thought, okay, I'm going to put myself into this whole phase and see if I can come up with this again, you know, go back to this feeling sad and all this stuff. Could not get it to repeat, never repeat it. So I accepted it. I said, that was the real deal. He's not gone on to the next plane because he's got unfinished business, and he's going around and communicating with his friends before he moves on to the next plane.
Well, they do that. They do that.
I know.
And you'll have a confirmation conversation when you go home, and everything is good. I like happy endings.
Yeah.
But
so
it's
just
amazing.
An example.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That sounds like a good book, too. And I'm sure you've had a lot of paranormal experiences as well, from what I understand.
Quite a few. Most of them are in the book, and there's probably some I didn't get in there, but most of them are in there, the big ones, the ones that really kind of rocked my boat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now your latest book, Aliens at My Fingertips, I understand took a while for you to have the gumption to put it out.
Yeah, well, it actually is part of the same series.
It's book 4. Okay.
Yeah, it's book 4 of the True Encounter series. And the reason that I decided finally to put it out is because, well, you know how I'm just human like everybody else, and you get nervous about people thinking that girl's crazy.
I know.
If you tell your story, they're going to think, oh, she's off the charts. We don't need to talk to her.
You're singing to the choir, because I'm not very scientific. I'm just all woo-woo.
Well, I just decided, you know what? Everybody else is coming out. I'm coming out, too. And, you know, I decided these experiences were real. They were alarming and startling to me at the time that they happened. They captured my mind for days, if not weeks. I had to write them down after they happened because they were so strong and impressionable. And I had, that's one of the ways that I purge this stuff out of my system in order to free my mind from it, is to write it down. If I write it down and get it all down in detail, then it's like relieved off my mind and I can move on to other things. So these were just three different experiences with three completely different type of alien encounters. I call them aliens because the word is shorter than extraterrestrials, but they're extraterrestrials. You know, they're not what we'd call alien wetbacks or something like that. But anyway, so yeah, this one was woke me up from a sleep, and there were two beings at the foot of my bed. Another
How old
one
were you at that point? Was that younger years?
No, that was like in my 40s, my mid-40s, I think. Yeah. And then the other one, that was the first one, mid-40s. And then the second one was the aliens at the ARCO station. That one, excuse me, even if the other two were not real for some reason, the aliens at the ARCO station definitely was real. I mean, there's no way to... And that just proved to me that these people, or extraterrestrials, beings, can be among us, and we don't even recognize, most people don't even recognize them. I have kind of this antenna thing in my system that I've been around the globe so much and done so much archaeology and been out in the wilderness, learned so much from my dog when I had him, you know, because it was just him and me, and we'd spend long times in the wilderness, and he taught me a lot about how to open up my senses and be able to sense things, you know, that we all have the ability, but we don't, they're weak because we don't use them very much.
And, it's a two-way street, and we have to meet them part of the way. And I feel that on the other side, whether it's the other side or whether it's extraterrestrial life, they can connect to you easier if your consciousness is at a certain level. There's no doubt. So you've had so many years of experience in living, I'm not surprised that it didn't happen earlier in life. You were just too busy doing your earthly run around, doing this, doing that.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
And,
when you sit still,
and it actually may have happened earlier, and I may not have known it.
That's true.
I did have dreams, certain dreams that, you know, some of them are recounted, and those did happen at earlier times. I call them dreams because they happen when you're lying down in bed at night. But
let me add something to that, Sayward. When you are kind of green, okay, and this is true of people that get visitations from loved ones on the other side, it's easier for them to come to them when they're sleeping because you've raised your consciousness. You don't go floating with a silver cord to Saturn and Venus, but you do raise your consciousness a bit for them to meet you halfway. So they find it much easier. And sometimes you're not supposed to remember everything. You know, I mean, some level
Absolutely.
You get this communication, but you're not supposed to bring it back down to Earth. And
Absolutely.
I do believe that ETs can transform themselves into whatever they need to look like at the moment.
I agree.
So that's why you had them in your sleep, and now you've evolved to your consciousness where you're having them in full waking states probably.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm having them in full. I mean, the third one was, I think they were reptilian, was this pair, this couple that were up at the top of the Palm Springs aerial tramway. And that was very alarming. They're not nice. They were not nice beings. I mean, you got the definite element of fear being around them.
Right. Yeah. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. So we try to stick to the little green men.
Yeah. And that's not saying that all reptilians are bad. I don't know that. But that pair were not good people.
Not warm and fuzzy.
No, gosh, no. No, so they book, felt like they were going to bite.
So that book just came out, I understand, correct?
Yeah, that book just came out just a few weeks ago.
Tell us where we are in the, where people can find it and your other books as well.
They're all available at the moment only through Amazon, but you can get it through my website if you go to saywardaire.com. That's SAYWARDAYRE.com. Or you can go to Amazon and look up Sayward Air and you'll find the books. And they're available in both ebooks and print.
Oh, great. And, great. Now I want to go into the future for a minute. Your next book is about the dog you mentioned.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Tell us about that. Give us a little preview.
Well, the title is Brandon, the dog who grew me up and set me free. And it's going to be the life story about how I came to have Brandon. And then once I had him, how my own life changed so much. In large part due to him and due to the things that I learned from him and the experiences that we had together. And then some of those experiences are all written, not all, there, a couple of experiences are already written in couple of the previous books, The Brilliant Beyond and Connected by Consciousness. But the majority of it is not. And it's going to go into talking about how animals, I find animals to be so intelligent, but in a different way than humans. It's a different kind of intelligence, and it's one that is much more, of course, lined with nature and other realities even than we can perceive, and how I came to learn so much from him and what some of those realities are.
Oh, that's going to tear the hearts out for a lot of animal lovers, I'll guarantee you. Brandon's no longer alive, I take it.
No, he died about 5 1/4 years ago.
Okay. So do you have another dog now?
No. Now is book writing and traveling time.
And oh, traveling.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I always felt badly during the times that I didn't do this very often, but on occasion I did have to, you know, put him in a kennel or for a little while or leave him with some friends for a little while, and it just wasn't good for him. And after doing it a couple times, I said, I can't do that anymore. So now that he's gone, I'm not going to put myself in a situation where I have to subject some dog that I love to that kind of absence, you know, so I'll just wait until this travel section of my life is done, and then when I get more garden growing and another 15 years and I'm just sitting down on a land and still writing books, then I'll get another dog.
well, let me live vicariously through you. What are your globetrotter activities are lately? Where are you going?
Well, let's see. A year ago, I spent 3 weeks in Turkey on an archaeological tour, and that was very, very incredible. I loved Turkey, and I had been there before when I was 21, but never in the depth and detail, and especially not to the archaeological sites that we went to.
Not a place you want to go now, so the timing was good.
Yeah, and actually, we were going to go on to Lebanon and see Baalbek, which is, oh gosh, Baalbek is an amazing archaeological site and very, very old and humongous. I mean, enormous, hard to even imagine. If you ever look it up and see some of the pictures of the size of the stones there, it's, well, they didn't pull them on rolling wood, that I know for certain. So, but we did get to Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, and that was amazing. If you ever get a chance to go to Göbekli Tepe,
probably is not going to happen, but that's all right. Can I go glamping?
Can you go what?
Glamping, yeah.
What's that?
It sounds like, well, it's camping, but with, you know, blow dryers and electricity and all that.
I love it. Glamping. Okay, I got it.
Now, so, I mean, don't you just go somewhere and enjoy the beach? Or do you have to get your hands dirty all the time?
Oh, no, I love going to the beach.
Well, that's where you, that's what I was hoping you were going to tell me about all the glamorous travel you're doing. But you're doing a lot of research, aren't you?
Well, I'm going to places that I really have wanted to see all my life. There's so many amazing ancient historical archaeological sites around the world that I just find fascinating. And there's many beaches nearby. We did go to the beach while we were in Turkey, near Troy.
Great.
Yeah, and it was gorgeous. It was just gorgeous. I'd love to go to Italy.
Yeah, Italy is beautiful. I've been to Italy. But I got to tell you, you have done a lot, and you're still going to do a whole lot. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I'm looking forward to the end of the next 30 years. We're going to do another interview, okay? Because now I want to see how much of it you did.
Well, thank you. I hope I live that long.
Thank you so much, so much. I really appreciate it. And you take care, and I'll be in touch.
Okay, thank you very
all right,
much.
Thanks. Okay, folks, it's time for me to go. I want to thank you so much for being here today. And email me your ideas. That's what I want to hear, your ideas, okay, for future shows. I appreciate it. Find me at radio@spiritnetwork.com. Until then, thanks for being here, friends.
You've been listening to Spirit Network Radio. For more information about the show, please visit spiritnetwork.com. For more information about your host, psychic medium Francine Milano, visit her website at francinemilano.com. Until next time, remember that peace begins with an open heart.